Today I will try to finish what I want to say on the canonical quantization part, and more particularly I want to introduce some explicit representation and the notion of wave function that you should all be familiar with, but here we have been working up to now with just abstract vector. So usually to solve explicitly a problem, you choose an explicit basis, meaning that you choose a representation. Okay, so this is what we're going to do, because then we're going to see that we need this, in particular the position representation, to define the path integral. So what we're going to do is define the propagator as a path integral on the configuration space, so using the position representation. So before starting, so thanks for answering the quiz. And thanks, Melissa, for noticing first that there was a typo in the lecture notes on the definition of the time evolution operator in there. Of course, the kind of confusing point of the lecture, there was a typo in the lecture notes. So so the time ordered exponential is indeed from left to right, as I said it yesterday in the lecture, and in the lecture note I wrote right to left. So the lecture note has been updated, so have a look. So just from the quiz, I see that there are still questions about this time ordered exponential. So I'm not going to redo it now, but I added a problem in the tutorial for this afternoon. And I will start the tutorial with a few lines on the blackboard to kind of go through with you how this ordered exponential is appearing. Why do you have like all this integration? What does it mean? And these kind of things, okay? So we'll do it the first steps together, and then you will have a small problem to kind of work on it. So I'm not going to redo it now, and we'll do that this afternoon. Okay, good morning, everyone. So just to recap what we did yesterday quickly, let's look at this explicit example of this explicit Hamiltonian, which is kind of describing the Hamiltonian for free particle in a electromagnetic field. So here we consider that the electromagnetic field is classical. So of course there are some limitations to this description, because you will see in quantum field theory that it's a field, so it needs to be quantized. So then here we kind of do an approximation. But why did I write this Hamiltonian? It's also because here you have some t dependence that is not the t of this p and x operator. So it's what we call, like, we have an explicit time dependence in this Hamiltonian. And so as we have seen yesterday, as soon as you have some explicit time dependence, then the associated time evolution operator u is going to be kind of, so here we have an explicit dependence. So this is going to imply that our time evolution operator is going to be kind of complicated. And where does this come from? It's because now h of t1 a priori will not commute with h of t2. Okay, so h has taken at two different times, are not going to commute anymore.
Sorry, can you write a bit larger?
Yeah. I can try to do that. Maybe you will have to remind me at some point. But so this was what was in the quiz. So. And here I just wrote complicated, which doesn't mean much, but it's just what I want to say. So here it's because, we have h at a given t, h of t prime will be different from zero usually. So you need to use this time ordered exponential in the definition. Okay. Then the question was, in which picture is this Hamiltonian written? Is it the Heisenberg or the Schrödinger? And the way it is written here is can be is not very explicit. So in fact, this was just to kind of to tell you that usually you sometimes need the context, okay? Because here, of course, what we have seen yesterday is when we have a time-dependent operator, Hamiltonian, usually the Hamiltonian in the Schrödinger picture is going to be related to the Hamiltonian in the Heisenberg picture by this radiation. T, where here I wrote the explicit T dependence. And but often in the Heisenberg picture, for example, you so I remind you also that the Heisenberg picture is it's what you're going to obtain if you just quantize your classical system. Okay, so if you start from your classical Hamiltonian and you want to quantize it, then you get the Hamiltonian in the Heisenberg picture. And usually, for example, you're all familiar with the Hamiltonian of a free particle. You often write it just like this without explicitly writing that P is in the Heisenberg picture is going to be a time-dependent operator. So, okay, so here it's kind of the same. So it could be interpreted as in the Heisenberg picture, or as we have seen, if we work with this equation here, because this Hamiltonian is going to be always a polynomial of this x and p. In fact, in practice, what you have is that h in the Schrödinger picture is going to be the same polynomial or power series, depending on what is the what is the explicit function of x and p. But now the time is frozen, so you can also add the initial time. And the only time dependence is here. Okay, so since here I didn't specify any t dependence, it's kind of not very obvious. And of course, most of the time you're going to work with a time independent operator, because we have seen, for example, with the interaction picture that usually when you have a time dependence here, for example, it doesn't seem so obvious, but sometimes it can be that you put all the time dependence in this other part of the Hamiltonian, and then you can work easily with the time-independent Hamiltonian. Okay, so this was just to recap what we did yesterday. So any question on that? Again, for those who were not here at the very beginning, there are a few questions about this time order exponential, but I will cover that during the tutorial. So be on time. I will start with a few lines on the blackboard, and then you will have to do yourself kind of a short problem on this time ordered exponential. So any questions at this stage?
So I'm not too clear on what you said. So did you say this was the Heisenberg picture or the Schrödinger one?
Just what I said is that since here it's not specified what is the T, if you don't have the context, it can be difficult to know which one, because in the Heisenberg picture or Schrödinger picture, it's going to be the same form. It's just that here either it's a T or it's frozen to T0.
Okay, so it's ambiguous.
Yeah, here it's just ambiguous. And usually what I'm telling you is that most of the time for the Heisenberg picture or even for the Schrödinger picture, we forgot about to specify this T. So it's kind of depending on the context. For example, if you're given a state with the evolution given by the Schrödinger equation, clearly this Hamiltonian you're talking about is in the Schrödinger picture. Then if you're talking about state operator that's going to evolve with the Heisenberg equation, then obviously you're talking about this one. It's just if you want to switch picture, then you have to be clear of what you're doing. Okay. So if there is no more question right now, I'm going to introduce some explicit representation, because so here what we've been doing is usually everything was at least when I introduce this vector, it's an abstract vector. Okay, I didn't choose a specific basis to represent my vector, but in practice when you want to solve a quantum mechanical problem, usually you choose a specific basis. Okay, and this what I call representation is to choose a basis to represent your thing. And so we're going to mainly focus on one, which is going to be useful for to derive this path integral, which is just the coordinate representation. So it should be not so new for you, but I just want to fix notation and make sure that this is clear to. So what, which, as I said, the representation is a choice of basis. So here you choose the basis set. It's the eigenvector. So you're going to choose, where here, these are the eigenvector of the position operators. And which is defined by, so I'm going to, if I have several dimensions, I need an index here, but then I'm going to forget kind of about it. Okay, so this is the eigenvector equation. And in tutorial, in the tutorial last time, last Wednesday, you seen that the spectrum of this operator is just all real number. Okay, you don't have any restriction on the value of this. So here, spectrum. Of a equal, and here there is kind of an assumption behind this result is that space is continuum, and maybe, for example, if you want to work in a theory that is going to treat gravity, maybe this is an assumption that we should revise. Okay, but here let's consider that this assumption is reasonable, and so we get that the spectrum is real, is all real number. Okay, so the corresponding eigenvector are then also kind of normalized in a continuum way, meaning that you have this kind of relation. So here again, we're going to accept. So this is a distribution, meaning that, of course, normally a Hilbert space, since a Hilbert space is a vector space with an inner product, won't be really defined for distribution, but in practice, we can work with that and really to add some distributional function into your definition of your Hilbert space means that you work with what is called a rigged Hilbert space. And this is, I think, mentioned in the lecture notes. So if you're interested, you can read it or let me know if you have questions about that. Okay. And we also usually assume that the different components of the position operator are mutually commutative. And so that they possess a common eigenvector, okay? A common set of eigenvectors. So here you see that this is going, this X are the eigenvector for any component of the position operator. Okay, so this means that we, in addition, assume that. Okay, so now we can, if we have an arbitrary vector, so this is our choice of basis now. If we go back to an arbitrary vector, we can decompose it, expressing in the eigenbasis of X. So how do we do that? Usually. So the idea here is I'm going to, at the end, express that in terms of what is called the wave function. So how do you get to the notion of wave function here? Yeah, okay, so you introduce kind of, here it's going to be a resolution of the identity that I'm introducing. So this is just, and this is indeed what I'm going to, we denote psi of X. Where here, so what I use is that you have the identity and so this is what is the so-called position wave function. Okay, so this object, which is, so this is the definition. So I don't know how you started to learn quantum theory, but in some approaches, you start with dealing with wave functions. So it's not the more general object, because you see, it's just a choice of a representation for. So it's more general to work with abstract vector, and then here it's just a choice of representation. So for example, if now any operator f could be expanded in the position basis, so what would be, for example, the spectral resolution of this? So if you want to expand f on any vector in the position basis, how do you do that here? So here I was talking about a vector. Now I go to the level of operator. Okay, so operator can also be expressed in this basis. So how do you do?
You put identities one at each side.
Yeah. So the idea is that you want to say that it's that. So then if you write things explicitly, you have like two integration, and so let's say you have a dx prime, and here you will have a f of x prime, where just now it's a number, it's your function evaluated at this point. Dx prime, where here, if you write things really explicitly, you get okay, so you always check that you're consistent. You see that this is supposed to be an operator. So here, indeed, I have this is still an operator, okay? This object, whereas here, I still have my vector. I put twice this integration, so I don't need it. Okay, very good. So now let's... Really tired. Yeah, let's introduce maybe the notion of induced action, just to make, because usually it's what you have been using when you were working with a wave function. So the idea is to look at the action of an operator on directly on the wave function, on the position wave function, okay? So let's consider just a position. Yeah, let's consider this equation. So here we just want to map. I'm acting with my position operator on an abstract state, and this is my result, okay? And I'm going to consider that this is an eigenstate, so meaning that it's just acting by. So then if now I want to define my wave function this way, what I get is that this is, so I'm just going to, okay, so this is the definition of my wave function. Now I go through this equation, okay? So xx psi has to be equal to x. So here my assumption is that equal eigen state position. Okay, so so and here by definition this is okay, so what do we get? We get this relation between the wave function at the level of the wave function. So this means that we want to deduce kind of an induced action, where I'm going to use a dot right now. So the action of this operator on this wave function, okay, is just equal to just acting my multiplication here, as expected. And for an abstract operator, so if now I work, we get that I'm called A. If I want to act with A on a wave function, what does it mean? This means that what I'm really doing is that I'm acting with A on this abstract vector, and then I'm evaluating that with on the x basis, okay? Where here again, so x is always the same. Is the representation of this abstract vector on this basis. Okay, any questions? So in fact, you're using always this induced action without so much thinking about it. If you have been working with wave function, it's just to make the connection, and we're going to see that. So the X operator is acting by multiplication, so it's kind of trivial, but for example, we're going to see now, we're going to work about on the momentum operator P, and we're going to see that we have to be careful. The sign is kind of going to pop up, depending if we are acting on the abstract vector or if we're acting on the wave, function. Yeah. Okay.
So the state, the ket X, that's the basis state of the X operator, and the psi, the ket psi, is the eigenstate?
Yeah, so here, I kind of mix.
A little lost in the notation.
You're right that here I kind of used twice the same. So the X is indeed eigenvector they are defined this way in the position operator. And here I'm choosing, so why did I choose this notation? Yeah, so no, in fact, this one is just an abstract vector that then I'm going to represent in the, so I don't need this line in fact. Yeah, your point is good. So yeah, you're right here. Sorry about that. So I don't need that. So this is still, I want to act on an abstract state, but now I want to see what is the action on the, is it correct that? Sorry.
Just X on the left gives you X.
Yeah, this one gives that. So I think you don't need to make the assumption that indeed this is just an abstract vector that you represent as a wave function. Is that clear? Sorry for the confusion.
I was saying that the phi doesn't need to be an eigenvector of the X operator.
Yeah. This is what I.
So why is that?
So here X can act on this side.
Okay.
And indeed, sorry. Thanks for the. Okay. So and this is indeed what we're going to see with the P operator, that it's also going to act on this side, so it's going to change sign. But here. Okay, thank you for the clarification. Sorry for the confusion here. Everything is clear? Okay, so let's now look at another operator that we're going to use a lot. I'm introducing here is because we're going to use that in the momentum operator. Okay. So for that, I'm going to introduce a unitary operator here. So the aim is to find yeah, the action of P on a wave position wave function. Okay. So now for that, so what I want to find is P acting on a position wave function. Okay. So for that, I need to do kind of few steps. So let me introduce a unitary operator U of A that I'm going to define as satisfying U of A, which is going to act on a given abstract vector. So meaning that it's the translation operator. So how can we prove this equality? And first, is it surprising? It's not really surprising because we know that the momentum are the generator of the translation as a symmetry. Okay, so I don't know, maybe you've seen that in the Lie group, Lie algebra course that you had in the front end. So yeah, we expect that indeed UA is going to act as a translation, okay, which is exactly what we have here in the position. So let's prove now this equality because it's kind of instructing. So let's do that together. So first, the starting point is, again, the commutation relation between this x and this p. And so here I have an exponential. So if I'm going to expand, of course, this exponential. So I'm going to add some p to the power n. Okay. So from that, what can you say about where it's at the power n now? What is going to be the result of it? Yeah.
Sorry. In the induced action piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. You have an operator and you're acting on the psi of x, and then you have like the number times the psi of x, but we define the psi of x as a number. So it feels weird to get that the sandwiching out of a dot psi of x.
So here?
Because we define the a of x as the x psi ket ros. So are you saying that that notation means that you sandwich a in psi of x?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is exactly what we. It's yeah. It's the definition of this induced action when you write this like this. In fact, explicitly, what you're doing is your operator is acting on your abstract vector, and then you look at the representation of this result in the position representation.
Okay.
You evaluate it. And so, which is exactly what we wrote here for this x over. Okay. Okay, great. Okay, so how do you get this result? You can start with x p squared.
It's like n times p to the n minus 1.
Yeah, with still this factor, but yeah, very good. A bar n p n minus 1. For, yeah, and so now if I look at the commutator of x with my unitary operator, which again can be just expanded, so it's a sum over n of this minus a over h bar to the power n divided by n factorial. So what do I get here?
A to the n divided by n factorial.
No, you don't need. You don't have the factorial because you have the n coming out. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Super. So, so now if we just expand this commutator, Okay, so I'm just expanding that. What I get is that x and u of a, and I'm acting on my vector x. I want to prove this, okay? So this is equal to, so the other side is u of a time x, and here I will get the number. Okay, everyone agree with this line? So I just expanded, I'm acting now with this commutator on my vector x, and I'm just expanding it, okay? So this is the other side of the commutator. Now x over x is let's write it the other way. So now this is just a number. X plus a is just a number, and I still have u of a . So x acting on this vector, u of a of x, is equal to x plus a, u of a of x. So what can I conclude here?
That u of a x is proportional to x plus a.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so this, is that clear to everyone? Meaning that now, and since this operator is unitary, by definition, it preserves the norm of the vector. So you just get that u of a on x is indeed x plus a. OK, we're here to go from here to here. I use the fact that u of a is unitary. OK, so I just proved this relation, OK?
There we have the implicit assumption that we have some sort of irreducibility, right? Because x plus a, like the eigenspace corresponding to x plus a may be degenerate, right? So we could have several x plus a. For example, if we had spin, we would have two different x plus a, like the x plus a corresponding to spin up, right? So x plus a corresponding to spin down.
So, so here a is any real number, okay?
Yeah.
So it just, and x can also be any real number because the spectrum is, so here it's just adding, so it's not, why are you talking about the spin?
I'm talking because you could have another label.
Yeah.
Right? So you cannot, you could have multiple vectors that correspond
to
the eigenvalue x plus.
Sure. Indeed. So here I'm just looking at one property of this object, which is just the position, and I'm not talking about, if I'm talking with a particle with a spin or other property. Okay, very good. Okay, so now we want to, as I mentioned, you should know from the Lie algebra or Lie group course that P is a generator of translation, okay? And what we want to find is the action of P on X, okay? Then we will, once we have the action of P on X, we'll find the action of P on tau X. So now I have, here it's kind of, you have the generator, so it's at the level of the Lie algebra coefficient, and to go to the group, we take an exponential, which is exactly what we have here. So to go to the action of the generator, you need to go to the infinitesimal level, okay? So let's do that now. Okay. So we want the action, we want to find the action of P, which are the generator. So we need to go to the infinitesimal level. So meaning that I'm going to consider my operator, U of epsilon, with epsilon very small, okay? Then I can write, so here it's small, and then I can expand that in the first order in epsilon over h bar. So this by definition is x plus epsilon. This is what we just proved. So if now I expand that operator in the first order, what I get is that this is 1 minus, did I put the I? Yeah. I epsilon over h bar of the operator p. And then we can extract p. So we get that p acting on x is just, so I'm just acting with that. So it's just h bar time x plus epsilon minus x divided by epsilon, and I have a minus I here. And so the idea is that this is infinitesimal, so I want to take the limit epsilon goes to zero. So what do I get here? You should recover what you're familiar with, that the action of p on a ket x is given by a h bar. And then what do I get? Yeah. Oops. Okay, so this is my action of p on x. And similarly, you can get the dual one, so p on a ket will be with a minus h, okay? And then for a state now, so our aim was to find this induced action, meaning we want to find this. So here it's on the other side. So be careful, here we have a minus coming out. Okay, so here you have the induced action of p on a wave function. By definition, by what I mean is exactly this, and this is equal with the sign, okay? The sign of difference between here and here. Okay, good. Any questions on that?
You missed the prime, right? Minus h bar psi prime.
It's the derivative, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so this was one representation that we're going to use. Now the only other one that I need is the momentum representation. So I'm going to, so here everything was done for the coordinate representation. And the idea would then to find out, so when you work with the coordinate representation, instead of working with your abstract vector, you work with your position wave function, then all operators act directly on the wave function. This is given by the induced action. So we just look at the operator x and the operator p more specifically, and then you can deduce the other from that. So yeah, this one is not working. Maybe go here. So now let's look at the momentum. Representation. So now this, so the coordinate representation was obtained by choosing as a basis the eigenvector of the position operator. So now I'm going to choose as a basis the eigenvector of the component of the momentum operator. So of course, then I'm going to forget about the label here. If it's more than one dimensional, then everything is going to be the same. You can, I'm just going to forget about this index here. So first, let's now look at this equation in the position basis. And then once we have things in the position basis, we can deduce things in the momentum basis. So if we go back to what we have learned in the position basis, as you have seen, we can expand any operator in the position basis. So here the idea is that, or any vector. So I want to extend my eigenvector by adding an identity here in the position. And so here is the wave function of the momentum, okay, of the momentum eigenvector. It's a position wave function in the momentum eigenvector. So using what we have just seen about, so here, okay, but now for the specific vector p, what we get is that the action on this position the wave function of the momentum eigenvector. So this by definition is equal to minus h bar d over dx of x over p. And since p here is the eigenvector of this operator, this is also x of p. Okay, so now we get a differential equation defining so the momentum vector in the represented in the position. Okay, so what we get is that the solution, what is the solution of this differential equation?
Exponential of the
I. Yeah, okay. So this is just given by, so you have the h bar xp. Okay, so here you just solve this differential equation. Okay, so here I really just applied what we've just seen, but now for the specific vector instead of an arbitrary vector psi, my vector p, which is the eigenvector of my operator, of the momentum operator. Okay, so now the only thing we are left to is to determine this constant, and then we will have what we need. Okay, so the eigenvector here, p, exists for any, for each p in R, so meaning that the spectrum, again, is all real number and it's continuum. So we can also use now the normalization condition. So as I said, x, so let's first use the position. So here is the normalization for position eigenvectors. And the idea is that I want to get this object. So how do I get that? What should I do here? I want to find what is C. So I'm using the normalization condition. But so I need to introduce, yeah, the wave function for the momentum vector. So what is the next step here? In terms of the p now, okay? So very good. So what I get, p y, and again, I'm using the result of what is xp. Okay, so I get now my two constants, c, an integration over p, and I got the exponential of, so xp is I x minus y now, because it's the other way, p divided by h bar. And so, do you know what is this EA? What is the value of this integral here? What are you expecting?
Of B.
Sorry?
Of B.
Yeah, with normalization, because so, yeah, it's kind of, you know, that the Fourier transform of the delta function. So usually you have a 2 pi here. So the 2 pi is going to be here. Okay, so here we integrate p, it's over all real number. And so what we get, which is nice because kind of what we wanted is that we get the 2 pi h bar, and of course we recover the delta x minus y. Okay, which is nice because then this is just telling you that this number times this number has to be equal to 1. Okay, and we if we take the assumption that c is real, then what we get is just that c is 1 over square root of 2 pi divided by h bar. So now we get the continuum normalized position wave function of the momentum eigenvectors. So here are the normalized position wave function of the momentum eigenvector and which are given by x p is equal, so usually we keep the bracket notation because otherwise it's kind of a bit confusing. Ixp divided by h bar. Okay, so this, and from that, of course, you can infer the momentum wave function of the position eigenvector, which will be just this px. Okay, and since that is real, you just get the same thing with a plus here. Okay, so I let you, yeah, so you don't really. Just the interpretation, the name is different, but it's kind of exactly the same object, okay? Okay, so here, kind of, I think we have everything.
Where did we get the minus in the exponential?
In that, do you get the minus? Or maybe you don't get the minus, yeah.
Right, P, X has a minus.
Yeah, XP, there is a plus here. So the minus would be for the, yeah, the px. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so we almost have everything we need to start the path integral. The only other ingredient that we need is, again, to go back to this evolution operator, the time evolution operator, and to look at it in the position representation. And then this will be the starting, the object that we want to write as a path integral, okay? So just here, maybe as an exercise, what you can do, make sure that things are clear with this induced action, is to look at the Schrodinger equation that is, so we've seen the Schrodinger equation satisfied by an abstract vector. So now you can write it explicitly for the wave function, of course, you is something you're familiar with, but to make the connection between the two, it should be easy. Okay. Okay. Any questions here? Yeah.
So just for how you were saying it before, so this is the P in the position
representation. Yeah.
And so if we flip it around, it's going to be the.
So if you flip around, it's going to be the position eigenvector in the momentum representation. Okay. And so usually instead of saying position representation, we use the terminology, the wave function, the position wave function, but you could also say the momentum wave function. So if you flip around, what you get is the momentum wave function of the position eigenvector.
Okay.
But here, indeed, it's simply maybe to just say, yeah, it's a representation of the momentum eigenvector in the position representation. But just to make the connection with the terminology that is often used of notion of wave function, okay? Okay. So if no more question, I'm going to now just use the look at the specific operator, which is a time evolution operator, and in a specific representation, namely the position representation, but it can be written for any representation. But it's the starting point of the path integral will be in terms of the position representation. So let me just get a new board here. Okay, and okay, so let's look at the time evolution operator. We're going to work now in the Schrödinger picture. Okay, so yeah, it's the time evolution operator is kind of super powerful because once you know it, then you know kind of all the your state at any time. Okay. So again, in the Schrödinger picture, it's defined as the solution of this equation. Plus, we need to add an initial condition. And then once you have that, you can deduce that any vector is given. So for any basis, that I just call like this lambda basis, then we're going to call the matrix element of this operator defined as, so there are different names in the literature. I'm just going to give you them here. So it's called either the propagator, depending on kind of the context or what you want to do, it can be also called the green function. And or you will also see the kernel or the probability amplitude. So yeah, it's also written in the lecture notes, so in the basis. But most often, what we're going to consider, it's not for any basis, it's going to be for the position basis. This is for one basis. And then this is going to be the central object of in deriving the path integral formulation. Okay, so this is what I'm going now to. And this is going to be, central. So, it's what we're going to use in the path to derive the path integral. Okay, so now I'm going to start the second part, go to the path integral. So we have seen that the Dirac quantization is based on the Hamiltonian formulation of classical mechanics. And we're going to see that the path integral is more based on the Lagrangian formulation of classical mechanics. And and in fact, it was already, so even if most of the path integral formalism has been developed by Feynman in 1948, or something like this was the first paper he developed, the initial idea was really by Dirac. Okay, that was because in classical mechanics already at this time, it seems that the Lagrangian formulation is more fundamental than the Hamiltonian formulation. So it was kind of surprising that to go to quantum mechanics, it's only based Hamiltonian one. And initially it seems difficult to make the link with Lagrangian mechanics and the Lagrangian formulation. And indeed, we're going to see that contrary to the Hamiltonian formulation, where even the equation of motion are really have a very simple translation at the quantum level, here, if you start from the Lagrangian formalism, you're not going to translate the earlier Lagrange equation directly. Okay, what we're going to use is really the expression in terms of an action. Okay, so it's at this level that it's going to appear, but it's not at the level of the equation of motion that you make an easy connection. This was not a kind of obvious connection. And even we're going to see that, formally there are many things that are working, but I don't give too many details now. We're going to see step by step. Okay, so any questions first on this part? So this was what I wanted to remind you on the canonical quantization. So I don't know, everything was known already? Nothing?
Does it matter which order you write the Hamiltonian and the unitary operator in?
Yeah, it's matter, but here it's in the Schrodinger picture. So I think the first equation I gave you was in the Heisenberg picture, where it's in the other order. But if you write what is H in terms of U, H in the Schrodinger picture, in terms of H in the Heisenberg picture, you recover the other one. And of course, when H is not explicitly dependent on time, these two objects are going to commute, okay?
Yeah.
Then you don't care. So, and when it's dependent, explicitly time dependent, you remember that the expression of H in the Schrodinger picture is U time H in the Heisenberg picture, U dagger. So if you replace that, you refine the other way. Okay. And here, I'm going again to talk a bit about it in the tutorial, but everything is consistent here. If indeed you take the derivative of this, so if you agree with that, now you take the derivative of this object, okay, you indeed recover this order, okay? So not to get confused, I think maybe what is easier is to remember our state evolved with this time evolution operator, and then you can recover what is the definition of, if you don't remember the order. And the same with operators. You know that operator, how they evolve with a U dagger, and then you can, if you take the derivative of that, you can recover easily. Okay. Yeah.
So can you only do the path integral in the stronger picture.
No, it's going to be easier, but we see at some point that we need to go to the, for example, yeah, when we're going to derive the endpoint function as this kind of thing, because the endpoint function is defined with this operator x acting, then it's we will have to go back to the Heisenberg picture. But it's kind of more clear at the beginning to start with the Schrodinger. So this is it's going to be at least my starting point here. Okay. Yeah, so don't hesitate. If you have more questions, to let me know. We can spend more time on that. Well, for today, I'm happy to start the path integral because one of the problems of the tutorial this afternoon will need what I need to cover now. So, but I can still take more questions and we can also come back on that another day. Okay, so this was, in fact, we may need this expression at some point, so let's keep it here. I'm going to keep this one. And I may need the derivative. Let me see. Okay, so indeed the pace is maybe a bit high, but I only have like a week left to talk about the path integral. So it's indeed short. But hopefully it will be already give you some tools to start the QFT course, okay? So is anyone already kind of familiar with QFT or never we took?
What?
QFT, quantum field theory. Have you already taken any course in, yeah?
No.
No, okay. Yeah, so it's kind of, well, it's an amazing theory, but it's also super dense. So it's going to be, so hopefully this is maybe going to help you a bit on the path integral. Okay, so the idea, what I want to do now is to write the propagator, my first step. And in fact, we're going to see that with the path integral, we don't need to compute explicitly many things. So all the idea of the path integral is to, I'm going to show you what you know to compute explicitly. And then the idea of all the path integral formalism is to always try to go back to what you know how to compute, which is not a lot. So you never really compute many things explicitly. Okay, so I'm going to describe now like kind of a general strategy that is going to lead to the representation of this, of the matrix element, so of this time evolution operator, or if you want, of the propagator here, as by path integrals. And so for that, first I'm going to focus on a non-relativistic, one-dimensional Hamiltonian that is independent of time. Okay, so here H is, of course, non-relativistic, but let's make sure of my assumption, even if it was the case before. One-dimensional, it's what I use most of the time before, even if everything I said can be very easily generalized to many dimensions, many particles. And here, independent, there is no explicit dependence of time, okay? Independent of time. So let's start again from the, we could start from the position here. Maybe let's start from the position wave function in the Schrodinger picture. So here I'm in the Schrodinger picture, and this is my position wave function. Okay, so by definition, this is what I mean here. And here I can introduce the time evolution operator to go back to t prime. So I'm going to call my initial time here t prime. And now I want to make appear this propagator here. So what I'm going to do is to introduce some resolution of identity again. So let's maybe the dx prime. So I'm going to introduce a resolution of identity here, x. X prime so here you recognize just the expression I wrote before, so what you get is that indeed, let me write it here maybe. Is indeed equal to k of t prime acting x prime t prime. So here is the propagator from the initial space-time point x prime t prime to this final point x prime prime t prime prime, okay? And if you take the kind of norm square, this can be interpreted as the probability up to some, of course, proportionality factor of finding the system at this point at time t prime prime, okay? Okay, so now what I want to do, so for simply, just next step I'm going to do is not necessary. But I'm going to do it just because it's going to simplify the kind of integral we're going to get. So what I'm going to do now, it's what is called a weak rotation. Okay, so it's, this is really done for practical reason. It's going to allow us to work with Gaussian integral instead of to go, to the complex plane. So in the tutorial this afternoon, you're going to do kind of the same calculation I'm going to do now, but without doing the weak rotation, meaning that you will have to deal with complex integrals, okay? But just because it's easier to work with Gaussian, I'm going to do this weak rotation. And it's also what is allow you to make the link with what you will see in statistical mechanics where, you're going to work with the same. In fact, you're going to work with the same object, but really with kind of weak rotated, okay? So anyone is familiar with this weak rotation? So can you?
So it's
what is it?
Tied to T to IT.
Yeah. Okay.
Change from T to temperature.
Okay, so what is the weak rotation? So again, this is a choice of steps. This step you don't really have to do it, and you won't do it this afternoon in the tutorial. But so the idea is to consider pure imaginary time. And so the weak rotation is considered as. So now if you have a function of time, you get a function of tau, which is defined as your function of time for an imaginary time. Okay, so this is what is called the weak rotation. And you're also going to use it in sometimes in quantum field theory, okay? So I can apply this weak rotation to my operator, time evolution operator.
Okay.
So let's do that. So do I need anything here? So yeah, here is the object I call K. Which is this is here. And indeed we see that this time evolution operator, once it's weak rotated, is what we called statistical operator, which is kind of a density matrix at thermal equilibrium, as you will see in statistical mechanics. So here, if I apply my weak rotation to this object, what I got is that U of, now I don't have any I anymore. Yeah, and I'm going to work in terms of tau. Okay, so now the object that I want to study to write as a path integral representation is this object, but the weak rotated one, okay? And so for that, let's consider that, let's specify my P square over 2M Hamiltonian. So I'm going to consider again Hamiltonian of this form, meaning it's one dimensional. And here V, I'm not going to specify V right now. But the idea, it could be like V could be x squared, or alpha could be also, it could be an exponential x squared plus some lambda x four to the power 4, where lambda is a small parameter compared to alpha, and have some perturbation expansion, as we will see at some point. But so here, it's kind of a generic Hamiltonian that you could consider, okay? And so the idea is that, of course, to compute U via H is already non-trivial, as we see. So the idea here is to try to find a way to compute this U operator valid for any V. Okay. And what is the idea here? The idea here, what we're going to use is, we want to divide our time interval into very small time interval, okay, sub-intervals. So this is our idea here, is to try to so now the next step, so this is kind of the typical Hamiltonian we can consider. And we really want to find a way, kind of a generic way, to compute U for that is valid for any V here, okay? And for that, the idea is to really divide the time interval into N equal sub-interval. And this, so I'm going to call t0, tau0, t prime. Then tn is going to be given by t prime plus n time epsilon, where my epsilon is given by this final time minus initial time divided by the number of interval I want. And the final one that I'm going to call big N here and because H is time independent here I have that H is commuting with H so I can really write so I have H equals zero so I can really rewrite my exponential of H as a product of small u, okay? Where here, this can be now written as a product of one to n. So where here, epsilon is really the duration of each subinterval, okay? So this is the idea because, so let's maybe write it explicitly just if I, so let's go back to this object K. which is a matrix element, and see what we can do now. So again, K is defined as a matrix element of this U, where now I use a weak rotation of H divided by H bar X prime. And so what we're doing is, so let's just do this division for n equal, yeah, 2, so just 2 intervals. So what we're doing here, and then we're going to generalize that for any. I'm introducing time. So here I'm introducing this intermediate time, tau. So this is my first step. I just separate the time evolution into two smaller ones. Okay, so of course then at the end I, for simplicity, I'm going to consider equal some interval, but here it's only in two, so it doesn't really matter. So here I'm dividing time interval. And then the next step is to introduce a resolution of identity here. Okay. And so what I get is, I'm just writing the same thing. H bar, and now I'm introducing this resolution of identity. And so I'm just writing thing explicitly for this simple thing where it's divided just into two, just to kind of discuss with you what is the interpretation then of this X prime. So what we get here, so here I just introduce the resolution of identity. So this means that here what we have, d over x of the product of two propagators here from x. So I'm going to, from x tau to the final point. And initially I was going to the initial point to this intermediate point. And what you can see here is what you get is really kind of a quantum mechanical rule for combining amplitude. And okay, and so what does it mean now? It means that a particle propagating from x prime to t prime, x prime to x prime prime, must be somewhere at a given, at the given intermediate time tau. Okay, so this somewhere is what we call x, but since it can be anywhere, to compute the amplitude, you need to integrate over all possible position. Okay, so tau here is fixed, but it's just that at the given time tau, that is between the initial time and final time, you know that your particle can be somewhere. This somewhere is x, but you integrate over all possible somewhere, all possible x. Okay, so this is really the idea of the path integral formalism, and if you really do that for n sub interval, what you get is so here the initial time, final initial position, final position are fixed. So you can generalize that. Okay, so if it's for n interval, what you get at the end is that you get this kind of product. So product from 1 to n of this intermediate position that we integrate over all possible one of this minus 1 xi minus 1. So these are your intermediate propagator, and I think I'm missing the my choice of dimension here. Maybe missing. No, I shouldn't miss anyone. Where here x0 is fixed to x prime, and xn is my final point. Okay? And so here the tau I are fixed. And you integrate over all position intermediate position, okay, that correspond to each tau. So what is kind of the drawing that you have here? Here you have a kind of the propagator is then the integral of the propagator of an n-leg path, okay? So you start from a given point x prime that is also x0 here. Your particle is here. You know that your final point is x, and you have divided your time interval into n, so this is epsilon, 2 epsilon, and you integrate over all possible, so this is tau 1, and these are the different x1, okay? And you get something, yeah. That is going to look like this, and same thing at the end, at a given, sorry, this is at a given time, and then you can complete. And so when the number of tau becomes infinite, okay, so right now we took a fixed number n, but when we're going to take the limit n goes to infinity, then this will mean that indeed here you're going to sum over all possible paths from x prime to x prime prime, okay? So if then you take n goes to infinity, you're indeed going to get the notion that you're going to sum over all possible paths that has x of tau, that has the initial point and final point are fixed. Okay. Okay, so now the idea is to, because we divided this under subintervals, why is it going to be easier to compute things? It's because, so you see, instead of having this slope, so in the definition of u here, you have the exponential of h times the time interval. Now this time interval is going to be very small, so this is going to allow us to do some expansion, okay? So instead of having to deal with exponential, we can deal at the linear level and everything, okay? And in particular, we're going to see that when v is equal to zero, we can solve that explicitly, and it's going to be not an approximation, it's going to be the final result, and then we're going to see what we can do with the different possible v, okay? So now the idea is to, in the last 5 minutes I have, is to focus on a given subinterval. So any questions first? Like, so then in practice, you will not really go back to this division of interval into n subinterval, but it's really important to have that in mind because it kind of gives you an interpretation of clear interpretation of what is the path integral. And in addition, we're going to see that, in fact, even if the path integral, we're going to write it in a formal way with a integration of all possible continuous paths. In fact, this integration, this measure, is not really well understood and well defined. And if you would really be going to do things properly, you should go back to this thing. So then in practice, again, we are not going to go back so often to that case, just for the first cases. And then, but yeah, it's good to have that in mind. OK, so we focus on a sub interval. And I'm just going to do the case v equals 0, which is simple. So this is minus 1. This is the object I want to consider. So again, the interest is that now, in this definition of u, I'm going to have an epsilon times h. Epsilon is very small, so we're going to be able to expand things. So let's first look at the case v equals 0, where in fact here we can compute things exactly. And we can do an exact computation. I'm just going to give you quickly what you need to compute here. And then you're going to see that in the tutorial this afternoon, another way to do it. OK? So here we're going to use, I had it until now, and I just erased it. OK. So what do we want to compute? This object, when v equal to 0, is equal to of minus epsilon divided by h bar of the operators p squared divided by 2m . Okay, so with just what we have seen before, what is the next step here? Are we going to compute that? Next step is to introduce the resolution of identity here in terms of the p, okay? Then what we get here is this 2m over of now dp using the eigenvector of the p operators, the momentum operator, okay? Okay, so as I said, I just erased what was this object. But so p acting on p is just p, okay? So of course, you can expand the exponential in terms of power of p, but you're just going to get power of the number p now. So what you get here, and xn with p is also known. It was what I just erased now. So what you get here is just an integral over dp of this exponential of minus epsilon over h bar. You have the p squared over 2m. So now it's a number. And this exponential of I p of h bar xn minus 1. And you have the normalization factor that we just computed a few minutes ago, that now it's squared, so I don't have the square root anymore. So again, these factors and this factor are coming from this object and this object, OK? OK, so how do you compute this integral? Yeah, it's a Gaussian integral. So either you either recognize that it's the Fourier transform of a Gaussian integral, or another way to do it is you kind of complete the square here to do a change of variable and go back to really a Gaussian integral with a constant term going out. So I let you check that, but the result that you get is, and you're going to do it this afternoon in the case without doing weak rotation in a different way. So here, in fact, we computed this object, but this is not using anything of path integral. It's not using the path integral representation yet. It's, so you have an epsilon, yeah. It's just using what we have seen in canonical, in the canonical approach, okay? Here I'm just use what we have proved this morning using, yeah, the position representation, and you still have an M here. Okay, so this is your result. And yeah, I'm going to conclude here. It's maybe not the best place to conclude, but anyway, so the idea is really to compute what we're going to see on Monday is to finish this calculation, but for any V, and then put all of them together. Okay, you have a product of n of this subinterval, and see if we can take this limit n goes to infinity. And then this will give you the representation as the path integral of this propagator. Okay, so this is what we're going to do on Monday. For this afternoon, normally one of the problems is to compute that, usually already using the path integral formulation, but without doing the weak rotation. So I will have to check that this is still, you can do it with what I've covered now. Otherwise, the rest is some review on this U operator, and also one problem on the distinction between Hermitian versus self-adjoint operators, okay? So let me know if you have any questions. Sorry for being a bit late.